On the air at News Radio 1070 WKOK and online at WKOK.com. This is WKOK Sunrise.
Thank you so much for joining us here on WKOK Sunrise. Rob Center is fabulous, and he is back, so we appreciate him coming in and taking good care of us. He enjoyed his day off yesterday, I hope, anyway. And Matt Catrillo's got the day off. So over in the newsroom, we have Taylor Schultz filling in today. In the studio with me now, Dr. Anthony Ragusa is here. He's a psychologist at Evangelical Community Hospital. We decided about a month ago after he read one of his columns that we really should talk about suicide prevention. I believe we did it. At that time, we ran the column and talked about that, but we're going to elaborate on that today. We think there's a lot to say, and suicide numbers are increasing. That just flabbergasted me, really, for some strange reason. I would always think that this kind of issue would go down, but they're going up. Dr. Ragusa, welcome. And why would numbers go up?
Well, thanks, Mark, for having me. And this is a really serious topic, and I'm glad to talk about it more. You're right. Suicide numbers have been going up fairly consistently over the last 20 years. In fact, they're up about 33%. Now, suicide rates rise and fall over time, but we've been in a pretty sustained increase over a number of years. And at this point, suicide is the 10th leading overall cause of death in the United States. Now, that's nationwide. There are variabilities in rates depending on where you're at. Pennsylvania is actually a little below national average in its suicide rate, and both Union and Snyder counties are actually some of the lowest rated counties in the state in terms of suicide. So it really does vary depending on where you're at, but it's a serious problem across the nation.
So Union and Snyder County have some of the lowest rates in the state.
Yeah.
Who has the highest?
Well, it's going to depend on the county. Wayne County has a very high rate. Elk County and Forest County all have high rates.
What might be connected to this? Well, let's start to dig into some of the reasons for this.
Yeah, and I wish I had an easy answer for you, but I don't. There are complicated reasons for this rise that we don't fully understand. We think that part of it has to do with the increasing divide between the haves and the have-nots, the economic disparity in the country. As more people get rich and the poorer people don't really catch up, that tends to increase levels of despair and hopelessness. We also think that there's a connection to the opioid crisis, which has led to a lot of suicide deaths, and there may be other factors too. But it's hard to generalize, because if you've ever known someone who has attempted suicide or died by suicide, you'll know that every case is unique, every circumstance is special. The reasons are always different depending on the person.
Well, we're going to be airing an interview Monday that relates to the opioid crisis. That interview happens to be recorded. And in that, they talk about pain being an issue. An individual had intractable pain. Opioids assist there, but there's restrictions on opioids now. You just can't get as many as you could get before. So that individual's intractable pain was completely overcoming.
Yeah, and you know, one of the problems we have in addressing suicide is that historically there's been a lot of negative judgment towards people who attempt suicide. They're accused of being weak, of not caring about other people, maybe of committing a sinful act. And one of the things to keep in mind is that people who attempt suicide are generally in severe pain of one kind or another. It may be a physical pain, but it's likely an emotional pain, a psychological pain, that they feel has just become unbearable. And on top of that, they usually feel like it's not going to get any better. They don't see any reason to think that it could possibly change. And therefore, they lose hope. And if you can imagine being in a position where you feel like pain is unbearable and it's never going to get better, you can start to understand why most people experience suicidal thoughts at some point in their life. Now, very few people relatively go on to act out on those thoughts, but having the thoughts is fairly common.
untreated depression becomes a factor in this?
Untreated depression and even treated depression can be a factor. But I do want to emphasize that having a mental illness is really not a great predictive factor in knowing who's going to attempt suicide. Depression is a risk factor, but we know there are a lot of risk factors that don't have to do with mental illness. And yet, even though research over the last 15 years has helped us to understand a lot of the risk factors for suicide, we're still terrible at predicting it. It's very hard to know who will go on to actually attempt suicide, which is why we encourage trying to err on the side of being proactive rather than trying to take a guess about who we should pay attention to and who we should say is okay. We try to err on the side of caution and encourage people to take action when they're concerned. They don't have to know that a person is likely to attempt suicide. Having the concern is sufficient.
So your colleagues in the medical field use the process of elimination in order to diagnose diseases. You know, they say, if then, throughout the whole process. But for suicide, we just don't have a reliable grid to say, okay, if a person does this, then do that.
That's right. That's basically where we're at. Professionals are really no better than lay people in predicting. Now, that may change. There's some interesting new research that's being done using machine learning techniques. For your more tech-savvy listeners, they may know what that is. But in the future, we may have a vastly more accurate predictive ability. But where we are right now, no, we don't really know. We do know things about people who tend to commit suicide and are likely to, and we know about what are some things to look out for. But the thing is that people can have many risk factors for suicide and yet never attempt. Okay? That's the catch. Having the risk factor doesn't lead to it. You can have many risk factors and it'll never lead to anything. Nevertheless, there are a cluster of symptoms that tend to be very concerning to me as a professional if I see them, and those would include things like a very rapid increase in suicidal thoughts and feelings over hours or days. Okay, a sense that the person feels like they are a burden to others, that they no longer contribute anything, they have no meaning in life, or alternatively that they feel like everyone has failed them, that no one cares about them, no one has their back, as well as a sense that this is never going to change, this uselessness or this betrayal will never get better, and there tends to be a couple of symptoms of agitation, irritability, nightmares, insomnia. Those tend to go along with an acute suicidal state.
So if we were to do a follow-up interview, maybe we should focus on hopelessness.
Hopelessness is one of the biggest predictors for suicide, no doubt about it. But again, many people can feel hopeless and never go on to commit suicide.
Okay, so is there, I was going to ask, what's the best warning sign, but it doesn't sound like there is a best warning sign.
No, there really isn't. I don't have a simple answer for that. Like I said, signs that a person is hopeless, that they feel like their suffering is unbearable, never going to change, as well as indications of agitation, insomnia, irritability, those tend to be your best, as well as a previous history of suicide attempts. If the person has ever attempted before, that's a very strong predictor that they will again. Having access to the means to commit suicide, that's a big predictor. So, for example, having access to potentially lethal drugs or firearms, that makes a big difference. And as well as having things like a social support system. We talk about preventing suicide. One of the best ways to do that is to develop a strong support system of family, friends, community, a sense that other people care about you and are invested in your life and you are invested in theirs. That tends to be very protective. There's research to suggest that people who are religious tend to be lower risk to commit suicide. People who are afraid of dying, afraid of pain, they're less likely to commit suicide. But again, taken all together, all these factors don't necessarily tell you who will and who won't.
All right, we have a minute left in this segment. In your column, this was probably a month or so ago, take any talk of suicide seriously. Take steps to help, including giving caring emotional support and helping to solve stressful problems. Try to come up with a plan to restrict the person's access to the means of suicide, and call 911 if you suspect a person's likely to seriously harm themselves. I guess summarize those tips, then we'll stop, but we'll take the prevention methods up in earnest at 7:40. Summarize those tips real quick.
Exactly. So you want to be more proactive, and if you suspect someone is likely to harm themselves, you want to take action. You want to try to get that person help. That could be getting them to a hospital. That could be talking to them on the phone. That could be limiting their access to the means of suicide. But you don't want to just let things go. You want to do something to help.
All right, take action. That's a great way. 911 could be your favorite number there. You can call the psychology department at Evangelical Community Hospital, 524-6766-2. They might be able to help you out in some way. Certainly, a lot of the information we're talking about is available in print form and on the web, so they could hook you up with that information. We're right in the middle of our conversation with Dr. Anthony Ragusa, a psychologist at Evangelical Community Hospital. He's back today. We're glad to say that he carved out time to talk to us about suicide prevention. We're going to dig into that topic when we come back at 7:40.
This is WKOK Sunrise on your station for the best news, talk, and sports. News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
Thank you so much for joining us here on WKOK Sunrise. Super glad to see you on the radio. We're going to give a telephone number out right now, and we're going to give it out again later. 1-800-273-8255. Write that down. That's the National Suicide Hotline. 1-800-273-8255. So keep that handy. 1-800-273-8255. National Suicide Hotline. I'm glad to say that we are talking to a man today who has had to bone up on this topic even additionally to make sure that we're informed on this. So we appreciate that. Dr. Anthony Ragusa is here, psychologist at Evangelical Hospital, been on staff at EVAN for about 2 years now, Penn State undergrad work, Wright State in Dayton, Ohio for his PhD, and we just had to call you back in. You know, we met you last year, and I think had some good conversations, but this suicide thing just keeps popping up. Statistics are on the increase. In terms of young versus old, male versus female, unfortunately, who is committing suicide?
Well, as I said, yes, the rates are climbing all across the board, but young people and older people tend to be at higher risk, and men are more likely to die by suicide. Women are more likely to attempt suicide because men are more likely to use more lethal means when they actually do try to commit suicide, and women are more likely to make attempts.
And if someone attempts suicide, what is the road back? Of course, there's no set way to determine how they got to be at that low point in their life. So sort of what is sort of a general path to the road back after that?
Oh, man, that really depends on the person. You know, oftentimes what we find is that if a person can get through the crisis, even just a few days later, that drive to commit suicide will often go away. And you can think about it in a way that I think most people can relate to. If you've ever been in a romantic relationship with somebody, and you've had a big fight with them, let's say, and you walk away from that fight saying to yourself, you know, I just think we need to get divorced, or we need to break up. This is never going to work. Nothing's ever going to change. You know, that may be the way you feel about it in that moment, but tomorrow, a couple of days later, after things have cooled down, you feel like, okay, well, maybe we can work this out. Maybe we can find some other solutions to this problem. And that's one of the things I want to try to get across here. What I say is that for the vast majority of people who are thinking about suicide, what makes it such a tragedy is that not only is it its negative effects on all the other people in your life, but often it is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. And that sense that nothing is ever going to change, nothing is ever going to get better, and it's just awful, is how we feel right now, but it's likely not how we're going to feel down the road.
So maybe a two-day waiting period for every major life-changing decision would be sound advice.
Yeah, but some people take a lot longer to bounce back. It depends on what are that person's coping skills. You know, how sophisticated are they with coping with stress? What are the stressors in their life? Are these things that we can find solutions for or not? It's really going to vary by person how quickly they bounce back.
So the statistics are on the increase. The number of suicides are on the increase. If there were any bright spot in the numbers, it's that Union and Snyder County do have lower rates of suicide. So, I mean, that is noteworthy. That maybe when we had some teen suicides in recent years, maybe that's what made them so newsworthy, is that they were somewhat unusual around here.
And yet, my guess would be that most of your listeners either know somebody who has attempted suicide or died by suicide.
Okay. Well, yeah, true. Yeah, no, true that.
It affects so many lives. It's not just the person who is suffering. It's also all the other people in their family, their friends, their community.
Right. Yeah, we talked about that. That actually came up recently, how the ripple effect in workplaces and just all over the place. Mm-hmm. All right, suicide prevention. We really want to dig into that. Mm-hmm. Take any talk of suicide seriously, you say.
That's right, because even people who quote unquote don't mean it or are looking for attention, these are also people who may engage in very risky behavior and do things that accidentally lead to suicide when they didn't actually intend it. These are people who are still suffering even if their intent is not to die. So what I say is that if anyone talks about wanting to die or feeling like life isn't worth living anymore, you should take that seriously. Now, what taking it seriously looks like is going to depend on the situation. In very extreme circumstances, it might mean calling 911. And if you do that, the police or an ambulance will come and check on the person. And if they think the person is at imminent risk of harming themselves, they may take them to the hospital for a couple of days to try to get them through that crisis period. But usually, that's not necessary. Usually, when I say take it seriously, what I mean is things like communicating to the person that you're worried about them, communicating to them that you care about them, and that you're there to help. If there's anything that you can do, you're willing to help. Trying to get that person connected to other people who might be able to help. So, for example, making sure that maybe friends and family are aware of the situation. Trying to get maybe clergy involved, or connecting that person to a mental health professional who may be able to help that person to figure out what are some solutions to this problem that the person has not yet been able to identify for themselves.
So something like a suicide support group for people who have gotten to that point? Is there such a thing?
There may well be. I'm not aware of any in our area. Certainly support groups are generally a great idea because support groups let you know that there are other people going through similar things to what you're going through. But really anything that you can do to try to increase that sense of connection and support from other people is helpful. And as well as you know, focusing on what are the reasons for living. Oftentimes, again, in times of severe stress, we become focused on all the things that are wrong in our life, and we start ignoring the things that are okay or could become better down the road. And so one of the things to do is to make a deliberate effort to think about, okay, what are my reasons for living? Not just what are my reasons for dying, but what are my reasons to stick around?
And so this is all part of a very active plan that someone's assisting with them to make sure that that they are reminded and actually taking steps to get in contact with, as you mentioned, family or clergy. So if that goes with this idea of taking suicide very seriously, a series of actions that I would take for that person.
Yes, that's right. And oftentimes coming up with a plan is exactly the way to put it.
A suicide prevention plan.
A suicide prevention plan, that's right. So that might look like an agreement with the person who you're concerned about that that they will do certain things when they're thinking about suicide. They will do certain things to try to prevent that, like calling a friend or going for a walk or taking a nap and getting just some rest, because rest is very recuperative. Avoiding alcohol and drugs, because alcohol and drugs tend to make us more impulsive and impair our judgment and make us more likely to do things we wouldn't normally do.
Okay. You also you wrote a column about a month ago, and we were glad to use excerpts of it here on WKOK, include removing guns, medications, alcohol, toxic chemicals, and even car keys from the individual temporarily.
Temporarily, that's right. That would also usually be part of the plan, is figuring out, okay, if a person is seriously thinking about suicide, oftentimes they've also thought about what's their plan, how would they do it. If they don't have a plan, or if they have a plan and don't have the means to follow through with that plan, they're at lower risk for suicide. But if they have thought about it, if they have a plan and they have the means, they are at elevated risk. And so one of the ways to manage that is to reduce the access to means, to just make it harder. And you might say to yourself, well, what's the point of that? If a person wants to die, they're going to find a way to do it. And technically, yes, that's true. But what we've found through research is that if you take little steps to try to make it a little harder to follow through with a plan and make it a little harder to commit suicide, that will reduce the numbers of suicide. It really does help.
That temporary thwarting is verifiably...
Exactly,
helpful.
Because again, in a crisis, people often get very focused on one solution to a problem, and they think this is the thing that I have to do to make this better. And if you block that route, then they're stuck, and they may not find another way.
You say don't be afraid to call 911. Somebody may think that's extreme, but...
Yeah, I have patients who are worried about maybe a family member, but they don't want to call 911 because they're afraid that that person may get really upset with them, that person may get taken to the hospital against their will, that it may be a bad experience for them. They don't want to feel to blame for any of that. They want to avoid that confrontation, and that's very understandable. And like I said, that may not be the best solution in that situation. What I also think is that if a person is really in danger, if we're really worried about them, my experience has been that getting them to a hospital, they may well be upset with you in the moment, but that if you get them through that day, the next couple of days, that usually will get better, that they will understand where you were coming from, and they will forgive you, and they will even feel closer to you because now they know that you care, and they know that you will take them seriously when they are talking about suicide. In my practice, when I've had to call 911 for certain patients that I've been concerned about, most of the time, yeah, they're not happy with me in the moment, but after they get out, you know, we're still able to work together.
Well, in the 302 commitment, when somebody is committed to a state hospital or a mental health facility against their will, life-changing consequences, that in some ways can be prevented, you know, if the individual volunteers, for example, but if it's appropriate, it's got to be.
Yeah, done. It's much better if the person make that decision for themselves, and oftentimes people do. Oftentimes people can say, yes, I really need help. I recognize that I don't know what to do, and I may do something I regret. And if they voluntarily go to the hospital, that's usually a better experience for them, and they certainly can do that. They can take themselves to the ER and let them know that they're feeling suicidal, and the staff will take it from there. And what I say, another thing I say to patients who are concerned about calling 911 is, you know, a person may get upset with you for taking that kind of intervention in the short term, but they can only be mad with you if they're still alive. And the thing that's really important at the end of the day is that we're trying to protect this person's life, and that's ultimately the most important thing.
Well, let's hope it works. Dr. Anthony Ragusa, Evangelical Community Hospital, Suicide Hotline, 1-800-273-8255. 1-800-273-8255. That's the National Suicide Hotline, 1-800-273-8255. You can get more information, go to evanhospital.com, look up Dr. Ragusa, and the psychology department would be more than eager to help under any of these kinds of circumstances. Lots more to talk about. We'll bring you back in the months ahead, and we'll pick up where we're leaving off. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me, and happy to come back anytime.
Dr. Anthony Ragusa of Evangelical Community Hospital. We thank Deanna Hollenbach at Evan, always gets producer credits for making sure that we get important conversations brought up and talked about here at WKOK.